I got an idea for an experiment. I wish for Sherry Vale to appear in my room. Oh, wow. I have a bad feeling about this.
Notice anything unusual around the house, Mr. Bailey?
Unusual?
Aliens.
Get rid of that thing.
I hate my life. Sometimes I wish my dad would just disappear.
This is not good. Doug, get to work on that circuit board. I got a good feeling about this. I think everything's gonna be okay.
It's time for the invisible dad to go to work.
You just kicked a police officer!
What's so funny?
No time to fool around.
I'm pretty sure that Duncan Gilbert stole my work.
Come here!
I'll bet you didn't see that coming. Just wanted to read the paper. Just a normal day off.
Welcome to They Call This a Movie, testing the strength of friendships one terrible movie at a time. Subscribe to the podcast on iTunes and other podcast services by searching They Call This a Movie. We're part of the Main Damie Network, and to find more from us, check out the website at themaindamie.com or on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at themaindamie. We're also now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. You can find them at gvnation.com. Welcome back to They Call This Movie. This is Anthony Lavecchio. With me, as always, is Dan Aquino and Mark Meyer. Say hello, gentlemen.
Hello, everyone.
I wish for a good bit.
Maybe next week.
Damn it.
It takes a little while for it to materialize, I think.
Yeah. I think you got to shout louder. Do you have your headphones?
I got to have blood gems from Africa, apparently.
Yeah. So, yes, everybody, we're back this week. And we're up to our old tricks, and we're tying these movies loosely to a brand new release. So The Invisible Man comes out this week, and we scoured Amazon Prime to find some movies where people turn invisible. And we found none other than the classic movie from 1998 known as Invisible Dad, starring directed by Fred Olen Ray.
Yeah. I feel like he's going to be the focal point of this podcast.
This is a very interesting director, Mr. Fred Olen Ray. But Mark, it sounded like you were about to say something.
No, I was just basically going, oh boy, when you mentioned his name.
Yep. guys, Invisible Dad. I'm not going to ask you if you've ever seen this movie before, because I assume the answer is no, unless Mark's going to pull one out of his ass. Oh, yeah, I have VHS copy.
I watched it all the time.
I still watch this all the time, guys.
I wore out 2 VHS copies of it.
Yeah.
Where are you coming from with Invisible Dad?
Where are we coming from? A place of despair. A lot of unfortunate moves were made in this film. I can't imagine anyone had fun making. Right? I feel like this was a strictly like collect whatever little money they were given and just get the hell out of Dodge as soon as filming was done.
This was probably shot in like a week.
You think so?
Imagine. Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. Do you think there was like a whole production crew? You know what I mean? Like there was a set designer, a principal photography. Do you think they had the whole works here? Or was it just kind of, you know, Fred Olen Ray just went out and said, this is where we're shooting. You stand here. You stand there. Action.
I would say that he probably had a bare bones crew. But look, it is in focus the entire time. The sound quality is fine through most of it. So he had at least a sound guy, director of photography, and probably an assistant director of photography. So there's at least maybe 3 or 4 people. I'm thinking like a crew of 10 to 12.
Don't stand up for this thing, man. You don't have to do this. All right.
Look, we've watched movies where the boom mic keeps falling in the shot.
They have that here. It's a hand. It's a hand instead of a boom mic, though.
Is it really a hand? I did not see
it. Oh, yeah. When the dad goes into the police station with the mop and he attacks the sheriff. I don't know who it is. He attacks the sheriff with the mop. You see the guy's hand.
I didn't see that.
It's there. It's so blatant. And I never see that stuff. So if I could see it, that's unforgivable.
I must have had my head down writing my notes.
I... I would imagine that the house they used was one of the actors' houses. Either the director's or it was Darren Norris's house.
I'm going to say it's the director's. So Fred Olen Ray, as we mentioned, is a very interesting filmography. He kind of made a name for himself as kind of like a cult drive-in sort of director back in the late 80s, early 90s with movies like Frankenstein's Brain, Commando Squad, Hollywood Chainsaw, Hookers, Beverly Hills Vamp, Alienator. And he just kind of Evil Tunes. And then as days went on, as direct-to-video stuff kept coming, he kind of, you know, read the room more or less, kind of, and changed a little bit. By the mid to late 90s, he started doing a little more family-friendly stuff, and then he started doing direct-to-Skinemax flicks that, if you are of the ages between 27 and 36, you probably watched a whole bunch of them, because they were played on Cinemax all the time in the late 2000s.
These movies definitely kept me company during many a March Madness tournaments.
Yeah, I'm just kind of like, oh, well, I'm not going to watch this. I've got cable.
Right. It's 3 o'clock. I just got out of work.
Yeah.
I'm not super tired yet. It's time to rub one out and then call it a night.
Yeah. So if you've heard of
Fred Olen Ray.
Yeah. So he went under the name Nicholas Medina for these movies, but probably heard of Bikini Roundup, Bikini Chain Gang, The Bikini Escort Company, Ghost in a Teeny Bikini, Bikini Girls from a Lost Planet, Bikini Pirates, Bewitched Housewives, Super Ninja Bikini Babes, Girl with a Sex Ray Eyes, The Girl from Bikini, Bikini Royale, Tarzina Jiggle in the Jungle, one of his later ones, Bikini Frankenstein, Bikini Royale 2, Housewives from Another World, Bikini Jones in the Temple of Eros, just classics, Bikini Time Machine, Sexual Witchcraft, Lady Chatterley's Daughter, Knockouts, The Teeny Weeny Bikini Squad, Musty Housewives of Beverly Hills, Dirty Blondes from Beyond, Baby Dolls Beyond Bars.
My favorite is The Girl from Bikini, but spelled B-I-K-I-N-I.
So yes, like the Man from U.N.C.L.E.
The Man from U.N.C.L.E., yeah. That's a good one. Probably an espionage skin flick.
Starring Beverly Lynn and Nicole Sheridan.
Ooh, Nicole Sheridan. That's not bad. She's a blast from the past.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to click on that one real quick.
I feel like
Evan Stone.
He's in all of them. Evan Stone's in all of them.
I feel like Genie in a Teeny Bikini is one that's come up either as a joke at some point, or that's the one that when people reference these type of movies, it's one of the ones that come up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Because it's just a ridiculous title name.
I think that might have been that's like kind of the first one in the in the Bikini series that came out in 2004. Bikini Airways, I guess, came out a little bit before that. These were all probably shot over a 3-day weekend.
Right. Yeah, these took very little to make.
Yeah.
You just pumped these out.
They all had... Everybody is the same... It's the same cast in every single one of them. Nicole Sheridan, Voodoo, Evan Stone, Beverly Lynn. They all make appearances in these.
It's... you have the core group of the Bikini series there.
Yeah.
It's good to keep the chemistry.
Yeah, it's like the core four.
Right? Exactly, yeah.
Beverly Lynn, so many Nicole Sheridan, Evan Stone.
Voodoo. There's a guy named Voodoo. The 90s were a wild girl. Time, man. No, it's a dude.
Is
Voodoo's
it?
A dude. Oh,
Voodoo, yeah. No.
Yep, trust
Alexander
me.
Alexander Boisvert.
I think he was actually married to Nicole Sheridan at one point.
Okay.
Yep. I don't want to really flex my porn muscles, so...
Dan.
Yeah, that's it. The porno man. Yep. Thankfully, that did not haunt me throughout my life, just in high school.
Yeah, so he did all of these movies and probably made a good amount of money from Cinemax dropping these movies. I've always wondered, you got like these actual like adult film stars in these movies. I'm surprised there isn't like an X-rated version of these somewhere.
I always thought it was like the original is the X rated and then they just
cut it out
exactly,
but they don't exist anywhere, I don't believe.
I guess not, and that's kind of a bummer, but I think they're trying to be more story driven. Yeah. I guess in these, I mean,
I always appreciate a good high concept porno movie. Right. That doesn't involve step step parents or step brothers or
MILFs. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's, you know, true.
Good old fashioned ghost that likes to fuck. Who doesn't want to see that movie?
I mean, listen, I'm all for it. Like Frankenstein. Give me more classic Universal monster porn movies.
Yeah, exactly.
We need more of that.
You know, Bikini Pirate. I mean, Pirates was the big production adult film.
That's
Of the 2000s.
And that kind of brought it into the mainstream. Like we can do things. We can make big budget movies.
We can make spy versions of softcore movies.
You could. I've never watched the Pirates series though. I'm gonna be honest. I'm gonna be honest. I've heard of it, never watched it. But I know Evan Stone was in that.
Yeah, there you go. Evan Stone, hardworking man.
That dude was ever. He's a legend. He's the Johnny Sins before Johnny Sins.
Yeah. Yeah, with that long mane of hair.
He was
like a caveman.
But now he looks god awful.
Catch up with him?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I'm assuming he did copious amounts of drugs.
Just the 2000s were just with a mountain of cocaine up his nose.
Yeah.
Surprised he doesn't look like Artie Lang.
all these bikini movies were just made with one brick of coke.
Yeah, right. That's how they paid Evan Stone, probably.
Guys, the brick came today. We got to film about 7 of these to pay for it.
Well, it's worth it. This guy has a very eclectic filmography. I mean, he's gone. Mark, you said it best. This guy has range.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because Ant was just about to mention his current escapades.
Now he's transitioned. He's no longer doing these bikini movies, unfortunately, because Cinemax I guess feel I haven't had Cinemax in a while, but I'm guessing that they've kind of moved away from that. But now he's doing Christmas movies, probably showing up on Hallmark and Lifetime. This is his Van Gogh blue period. This is his Christmas,
the natural progression.
Yeah,
so you go porn to Christmas.
Yeah,
which is worse for your career?
Hey man, he has 158 credits to his name in terms of director. He's working.
Hey,
working
listen.
Steadily since the late 80s. Good for him.
Yeah, money wise probably Christmas, because you could knock out a bunch of the softcore movies over a month and
I'm not knocking his work ethic. The guy works. I get it. I'm just saying, which would you be more embarrassed by?
I guess the softcore porn, because I've always just been like, man, I could write like 1,000 of these Christmas movies in like an hour. So I've envisioned myself in that position. I was like, shit, give me that money. I'll do it. I could write you a story about Candace Cameron going to the Midwest and falling in love with a guy that's trying to save his parents' tree farm. And she learns not to be a corporate-minded woman. And she's going to use what she learned at that corporate job to save the tree farm. And they have a whole bunch of kids named Chris and Noel and stuff like that. Bam. Well, wrote it right now.
But you see, this is why I think it's worse to be the Christmas story director. Because there's no imagination whatsoever. At least with a skin flick, you can add crazy shit in there and just kind of go buck wild. Right?
I guess if you start off with, you know, Alienator and Chainsaw Hookers, the natural progression is more towards the skin flick, because they're both B-movie trashy exploitation.
Right. You're like a stone's toss away from porn at that point.
Right. So it's probably a lot easier. It's like, you film a sex scene with Evan Stone wearing a pirate hat, and then they're like, all right, let's wrap, make sure the lighting's right. Evan put on this, I don't know, this eye patch. You're now a evil spy.
Right. Yeah. They put the suit on. You have a little gun. Now you're double X7 or whatever. I don't know. But you can stretch the imagination a little bit, at least with that. But in, like you said, you just wrote a cookie cutter. It took you 2 seconds to write a Christmas story.
Yeah. And the Christmas movie part of his career definitely sounds like, I want to have my grandchildren on set.
It could, yeah, it very well could be just like, you know what, I've experienced the raunchy side of cinema now. Well, cinema in quotes, that's not really cinema, but
Scorsese would have.
Yeah, Scorsese would have a conniption if he saw this filmography.
He watched Ghost in a Teeny Bikini. He's like, you know what? It's kind of cinema compared to Marvel.
Fred Olin Ray and Martin Scorsese are secretly best friends. They have poker night at each other's houses.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think in my opinion, and I'm also a huge pervert, so I would rather go.
That's on the Instagram.
I would rather go with the Skinamax.
Okay.
Yeah, I feel the he had that moment like we all had during 50 Shades and I had during Sleeping Beauty, where at one point he was just like, I got to do something different than film naked bodies all the time. It's like become boring to me to see Nicole Sheridan undress.
Real quick, I'll tell you a quick story. And then if you want to move on, we can, or we could just keep talking about this. It doesn't matter to me. I'm all for it. I worked with an editor at my old job, and one of his first gigs was editing for adult films. And he said one of his first days there, he was walking by the edit rooms, and you just see, you know, you see these scenes constantly. And people just get super desensitized, he said. So guys are just like staring, they're like dead inside, he would say. They're just watching people get pounded over and over again, and just like drooling because it's just brain dead stuff. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. So that's what it would be like.
Yeah.
I guess to film it constantly, you know, you're just like, okay, let's go back to this position. Right, yeah. We got to do this again, and it's just like over
missionary,
and over again.
Reverse right. Cowgirl, doggy.
Right. I mean, there's only so many things you could do anyway, you know. But yeah, he was telling me how bad it was because guys were just like dying essentially. They just shut off their brains because it's just not great to work with.
Right. So before he went to the bikini movies and Christmas, he did some high concept kids movies in the mid 90s. That's when he did not just one. Not two, not three, but four movies in which somebody turned invisible. The Invisible Mom was first off, 96. Then our movie that we're watching, that we watched this week, Invisible Dad, 98. Then there is a movie called, just scrolling through, Mom's Out of Sight. And he also did a movie where a dog turns invisible, too.
Ooh. He did Invisible Mom 1 and 2. Did you say that?
Was there? Oh, yeah, Invisible Mom 2.
Yeah. Look at that. That was a huge hit, I guess.
It also stars Dee Wallace. There you go. From and the older brother from Malcolm in the Middle. And Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees. Man, it's too bad we couldn't find this movie.
I wonder how he gets some of these people. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, those are, I mean, a couple of them are bigger names at that point.
They have rent too.
I guess. Yeah. it's sad to see one of those come across, right? Like the kid from Malcolm in the Middle, like, oh man,
I think this might have been pre-Malcolm in the Middle.
Yeah.
Well, I couldn't tell you when that ran. I know it was in the 90s. Right? I thought it was like 97, 98.
Let's see. Justin Burfield. He was also in Mom, Can We Keep Her?
Oh, boy.
Yeah,
it just...
2000, Malcolm in the Middle started.
Oh, wow. Okay. Man, my sense of time is terrible.
Yep.
I give this guy credit for just sticking with his like niche and just, you know, being unapologetic with it, just collecting whatever. How much do you think you get paid for something like this? Can't be much.
I'm thinking he's pulling down like maybe 20 grand.
Yeah.
Per project.
Yeah.
Okay.
Probably making a nice little nest egg for him. I mean, there's probably, I can't imagine more because they're probably super easy to shoot.
Right. But zero budget, really.
They're probably at least 2-3 weeks of shooting. We'll say 2 weeks of shooting and then editing process, probably a month.
Post-production stuff,
that's a decent amount of time, of his time. I mean, he's probably shooting another movie while he's editing the last movie because he seems to be like kind of a, you know, just a factory in and of himself.
True. So now, quick question. This is important. At what point in this movie did you guys tap out?
Good question.
Like mentally,
so I watched it twice. You know, obviously I watched it I watched it the second time with more invested because I'm writing my notes. I think around the time of the dinner date.
Okay, so you made a decent amount.
yeah,
of the way in.
Maybe 40 minutes?
Yeah, I was thinking the time when I checked how much was left, and then I said, Jesus Christ, there's 41 minutes left, is probably can be considered when I tapped out. Mm-hmm. I don't know when that was. Maybe was it around the Africa thing when they did all the stock footage for Africa?
Sure.
When they went yeah. there, I think that was around 41 minutes left or something. But yeah, that you know, said that out loud, not just to myself. I was like, Jesus Christ, you know.
What about you, Dan?
I tapped out when
the opening sun, credits.
No, I know. I made it a little ways in. I tapped out when the son wished for the TV actress in his room.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then she asked some really stupid fucking questions, and then he wished her away with the dad there. I'm like, okay, I'm out of here. I'm done.
They reference the X-Files.
They do. Yeah. This is some X-Files shit. They don't really say that, though.
Shit.
No. That would have been so much better.
This would be better. This movie would be better if it was a bikini movie.
Yes. It wanted to so badly at points, yeah. I think. Because yeah, now it makes sense why the kid is watching like a Beverly 90210 show.
It's a Baywatch. It's Baywatch.
It's Baywatch.
Okay. It's Ocean View.
Oh, that's what it was.
So Baywatch.
And the dad's like cool with it. Like, oh, well, you've earned a break. This kid's getting ready to jerk off, dude.
This has just glimpses of horniness in this movie.
Right. My dad would have killed me. He would be like, why are you watching this? Especially when I'm here. don't watch it while I'm here.
Hey, it's the number one syndicated television show in the mid-90s.
Baywatch?
Everyone was watching
Baywatch.
Yeah,
Baywatch.
Oh, okay. I was just saying, Anthony, I think Ocean View was made up.
Next, you're going to tell me the movie from Home Alone is fake.
I was kind of upset when I heard that wasn't real. I thought that was an actual, like, old-timey movie.
Yeah.
Movie magic, friends.
Yeah. So, Invisible Dad stars Karen Black, Charles Dierkop, Darren Norris, and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn has an IMDb score of 3.2 and no Rotten Tomatoes score, but a 12% audience score on Rotten Tomatoes.
Yeah, I guess that does sound about right.
Yeah, I did want to mention I'm pretty sure because I did watch Invisible Mom as well first in order to decide which one I was gonna make us do. Pretty sure the opening titles against that the stormy weather. Pretty sure it's the same for both of these movies.
Well, yeah, you got to cut corners where you can, I'd imagine.
Yeah.
Now, did you guys notice? And maybe I'm the only one who did. One of the characters does blatant blackface in this.
Who?
Mr. Wiederman.
The
nosy neighbor.
I think he was just wearing army-like.
I guess it's supposed to be camo.
It's supposed to be green.
But it's black, right?
Yeah.
Is it just me or am I?
I wonder how much that is the color saturation of whatever this was filmed on.
Yeah, I don't think he was trying to pass himself off as a black person.
He would be the perfect candidate for it, though.
Yeah. He's got a weird... Have you ever seen that guy? Did you see that guy's nose?
I have.
He has a weird-looking nose.
That's why I'm saying this guy is, like, the perfect candidate to pull off or to think it's okay to do that. Because I think he's a real nut job in, like, real life.
Yeah.
Charles Dierkop.
He was in The Sting. He's in some big fucking movies.
The name in Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid was Flat Nose Curry. He was the killer Santa at the beginning of the Silent Night, Deadly Night Part 1.
Yeah, he was. I just saw that. So this guy was in, like, he was legit.
Yeah, he's still alive, too.
Yeah. His nose looks more closely related to Artie Lang.
Yeah.
Right? Well, he did live through the 80s, man.
Well, but no one partied as hard as fucking Artie, dude.
Yeah.
I doubt that Charles Dierkop came anywhere near Artie Lang's level.
Probably not.
That's a very punchable face this guy has. That might be why his nose is so flat.
Probably. I was going to say he's probably like a boxer or something.
Kid Gorgeous.
That makes sense. Yeah. My interesting going back to Dan's point about where you tapped out. I think I only made it those 40 minutes just because of knowing Darren Norris from Veronica Mars. And also, you had brought up Fairly Odd Parents. I didn't realize that until you mentioned it, Dan, in our conversation.
Oh, he sounds and looks just like him, and it turned out to be him.
Yeah, yeah. But I knew the name once I clicked. I was like, I think I recognize that name, and checked it right before the broadcast here about Veronica Mars. But And then Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, you know, voice actress, does, you know, a whole bunch of things. She voice directs now. She was guest starred, you know, one of the more popular ones, her along with Will Friedle from Boy Meets World on Critical Role. So I was like, oh, a live action role from her. You know, I wonder how this is. And then about 40 minutes in, I'm like, sounds about right for a voice actor trying to do live action here.
That's what this whole movie is. Voice actors just trying to act and not being very good at it.
So, Mark, you stand Darren Norris and Mary Elizabeth McGlynn, but no love for Karen Black? What's wrong with that? What's wrong with Karen Black?
Nothing really wrong with her. I just had never seen Mary Elizabeth McGlynn act, you know, non-voice acting. So I was really intrigued by that. And then, of course, you know, have seen Darren Norris as the bumbling lawyer on Veronica Mars. He basically almost played the same character here in this movie. But and then about 40 minutes in, I was like, it's the reason these guys are more famous for not being on camera.
Yes.
I get it. Yeah. No love for Academy Award nominated actress Karen Black. That's all right.
Mark's a huge hater, so, and we know this.
I am.
That's true.
You know, is she in Star Wars? Because that would explain why I hate her.
She was in Nashville. Five Easy Pieces.
Now I kind of hate her.
I can't imagine you've seen Nashville.
Not a second of Nashville.
So, what do you guys say? We've wasted enough time. You guys want to try and get into the plot at this point?
That was a good ramble we had. Well, it touched on a lot of pornography, which is one of my favorite things. So
yeah, we don't do enough porn in this. Maybe we should have a branch off and do a porn. They call this a movie podcast.
They call this a porn. Movie. We have so many doors that we could open.
Yeah, we could totally do the entire bikini series. Now we could. We're talking about.
And, you know, it's ours for the taking.
Have to procure them.
I don't think Geek Vibes Nation will want to. Partner with us, but who knows?
Well, we'll leave that up to them. We'll tell them that we've got another podcast. We're watching softcore pornos. that's a more interesting. So not like full on like porn.
Right. We're not gonna go Dave Attell's old porn.
Specifically softcore porn movies.
Yeah, I mean that's a little more friendly for audiences.
We'll cover the Emmanuel series.
There you go. Perfect. And I mean, we could. I'm trying to think. I don't know.
That would make her second appearance on these podcasts.
Yeah, Krista Allen. Which I'm pretty sure. I'm under the impression though that Fred Olen Ray directed a couple of Emmanuel series after Krista Allen, only because the guy that plays Rivington is in like the 2011 Emmanuel series.
Okay.
So, and this guy's like, I don't know. I just assume that like Fred Olen Ray would have something to do with that too.
It's possible. But
I didn't find out.
It's not on his filmography.
Wow.
And in one of them, there's no director mentioned. So that's what brought me to think of that.
You know, that's a huge missed opportunity.
People can get away with using different fake names or stage names and, you know, do a rodeo during the winter.
Madison Bumgarner.
Wow,
that's a joke that I actually caught.
There we go.
Wow. I'm very happy I found that one out.
The assumption that Mark has that our listeners all follow baseball off-season stories is a big one, Mark. I'm not gonna lie.
I think our friend Matt Malloy would know that.
Yeah,
he's a big sports guy. I think he would have got that joke.
Yeah, that was Matt, the least.
Specifically for you, so I hope you got that one.
That was the least shocking baseball story of the offseason.
So you guys want to get into the plot?
Yeah, yes. Let's do that.
All right, but before we do, I think, Dan, you have a message?
I do. I wanted to give a shout-out to one of our good friends of the podcast. She is with Geek Vibes Nation, Tia. She has her own podcast, The Top 10 with Tia, a weekly podcast, where Tia and her crew tackle a number of entertaining topics, like the top 10 movies of the year or the top 10 worst on-screen couples. This week, they actually came out with the top 10 superhero fights, and I was going to be a part of it, but I had to get my wife's tire fixed because that's what my life is now. It's just fixing everything for my wife. This podcast has it all. My wife. Oh, I can't believe I sunk down and did that. God damn it, Mark.
Yes!
This podcast has it all. Don't miss out. So, yeah, go check that out. Geek Vibes Nation. You can follow them, obviously, on Twitter, Instagram. I always get their, and I go to their website all the time. It's gvnation.com, right?
That's correct.
Yes, I got it. So check it out.
Listen to what I say at the beginning of every fucking episode.
You talk so fast. It's impossible to keep up with you. I'm sorry. I can't listen that quickly. My brain registers things very slowly, Anthony. All right? But anyway, just go watch the top 10 with Tia. She's a good person, and that's all. All
right. So we're going to take a break to listen to a word from friends of the podcast. So we will be right back.
Hey everyone, this is Steve.
And this is Adam.
And we're part of the Hop Nation USA podcast,
Pittsburgh's number 3 craft beer podcast.
Join us every Friday for new beer reviews.
We'll talk about the news, history, and homebrewing.
Plus, we'll sit down with the best brewers and industry personalities that'll have us.
So whether you're a casual drinker, a hazy boy hophead,
or even if you're a whale hunting cellar hoarder,
just search Hop Nation USA on Apple, Spotify, or your favorite podcatcher and join the nation.
Oh, hi. Didn't see you there. It's me, George, from the Best Little Horror House in Philly, the show where we talk about the best horror movie ever made, according to our guest at least. We've talked about groundbreaking classics like Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Alien, but we've also got a lot of great ones coming up, including some very fun guests like Len Kabaczynski of Swamp Zombies and Red Letter Media fame, Caroline Williams, the star of Texas Chainsaw Massacre 2, and Chase Williamson from John Dies at the End. So make sure you're subscribed to the Best Little Horror House in Philly, and I'll see you boils and ghouls over there.
Welcome back, and it's time to get into the plot for The Invisible Dad. We open up, and Doug Bailey and his dad has just moved into the new home. His dad has a job that forces them to move a lot, and we are introduced to their crazy neighbor after they're done moving in, Mr. Wiederman. Doug, the kid, who's about like 12 or so, spends most of his time in his room building computers and programming his own computer games. And one day, his computer is going to run 64 bits. And we also have a dead mom.
Way to bury the lead.
Yep.
Yeah. The only thing I was disappointed about in this beginning was that they didn't show the game he created.
They did.
Oh, well,
they did.
I thought you were going to say the only thing you were disappointed was they didn't show the dead mom.
Oh yeah,
that'd be they have really dark Mark.
They did.
I must have been.
Yeah, it's called the Amazing Rat Race or something, and it kind of looks like Pac-Man if it was a mouse running through a maze or so.
Okay, well.
Yeah.
I was looking for it to be like, you know, some really bad 3D graphics he was doing.
Nope, it's two dimensional. Doug's dad Andrew is an architect that is tasked with building a shopping mall. Karen Black plays his boss, and I never thought of an architect as a job that would make you move around a lot.
I was just gonna say,
That's true. I never thought of that either.
He's either really good at his job or really bad at his job.
Like, it just sounds like he's like a freelance. He just moves from town to town building shopping malls. But like, if anytime it's been depicted in in TV and movies, they're like, they show potential for a lot of flexibility. Like, I feel like Clarissa and Clarissa Explains It All, her dad was an architect and he worked from home a lot because they always had, you know, they always have to tilt the desk at home too.
Oh yeah, they like the easel. Right?
Yeah.
Like, that makes more sense.
Like Ted from How I Met Your Mother was an architect, and he had a tilted desk with the T square at home at his apartment. And Mike Brady was always home. He was an architect.
A lot of architects I never realized.
Architect is a big TV show job for some reason.
I guess because they get to stay at home.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
You don't need to film them in the workplace.
Yeah.
That makes more sense. But yeah, Doug's the kid. When Doug says it in his really terrible voiceover that, you know, they move a lot, I thought he was like a military kid, you know, an army brat or whatever. And then his mom was like gunned down over, you know, like in the Iraqi war, the first Iraqi war or something like that. I don't know. That would have been more interesting.
A better movie?
Sure. Yeah. That's how you make the movie better. Doug's mom is shot down doing a reconnaissance mission in Iraq.
So Karen Black runs a small architecture firm, and they're really relying on the small project. So they brought in basically Andrew as like a hired gun, more or less. And if it's a success, Andrew's pay will double. We're introduced to junior architect Duncan, who hates Andrew immediately because it was supposed to be his mall project.
And looks like how all suits fit me because I never get them tailored.
There you go. This Duncan is Mark's fashion plate. It's the one he looks up to.
Yep, that jacket is right off the rack.
And he's like, just every time you dress up in a suit, you're like, do I look like Duncan?
Yeah.
And if the answer is yes, then you're like, mission accomplished.
Mission accomplished.
I'll just imagine that Mark has a picture of this guy definitely is Duncan in his room.
I just never knew what movie it was from. I just saw him on the internet one time. Right.
So we meet Doug's friend Jimmy, and he talks about how he's always having trouble making friends. He has this one really choice line that speaks to just abuse. He says, everyone always likes me at first, but then we move or my dad gets into one of his moods and scares them off.
Ooh.
Yeah, he does say that.
Yeah, that's a red flag.
Yeah.
But we never see that mood.
No. Well, he mentions that he's getting very mad because he thinks that the invisibility is causing his metabolism to speed up. So he goes and takes a nap.
That's so lame. It's just so goddamn lame. I'm getting angry. I'm going to go take a nap.
So Mr. Wiederman, he's a neighbor. He's spying on the new neighbors, and he thinks they're aliens. And his wife, who's like seems much younger than him, is just saying, no, they're not aliens. But he goes over.
I was going to say, Mr. Wiederman was definitely in Nam, right? Like, he's shell-shocked?
Yes.
Okay.
Most definitely.
Yeah, he definitely has problems. I was kind of upset that they didn't do the I forget what show it's from, but Abner.
Oh, that was from Family Guy.
Well, it's from a show before that, isn't it? I thought it was.
Yeah, I think Bewitched
or something.
Bewitched had the nosy.
The kid turned his father invisible.
Point is doing something.
Right, I worked up all this courage to get this porn. Are you gonna come over here and watch it or not? Yeah, I wish they had done that kind of joke, but this movie's too stupid to not do that.
Yeah.
So he goes over to introduce himself to Doug, who is tasked by his father to clean out the garage. And Mr. Wiederman tells him of the old owner, who was an inventor and possibly an alien. And one day he just up and vanished. Doug spends some time going through boxes that the old owner left behind in the garage and stumbles upon a weird gadget with a headset. So he goes back into the house, turns it on, and plugs it into his computer. He fools around with it for a while, I guess, and Andrew comes home and sees the garage is still full of boxes. So he orders him to go finish the garage and then go to bed without watching TV. And Doug makes an offhand comment of that he wishes it was still 4 p.m. and why is he still wearing the headset? And lo and behold, he opens the garage door and it's 4 p.m. all over again. So he realizes that this machine is some sort of magic. So he cleans up the garage the second time around. His dad comes home to him watching Ocean View, which is basically Baywatch, which is maybe set in Ohio based on the plot description of the TV, which is confusing because it's called Ocean View. And Ohio is notorious for not having neither the Atlantic or the Pacific on on
it's
on
that Erie Ocean, Lake Erie.
Mm-hmm. So next day, Doug tells his buddy about the machine, and Jimmy immediately thinks about the video games that he wants to summon. Instead, Doug conjures up a banana split and eats himself into a sickness. But at work, what was you going to say, Mark?
I was going to say that the next thing that's coming up is apparently the school district lets kids call themselves out sick.
Yep. Well, he did them a favor, and he called. You know?
Yeah.
That's nice on his part. So at work, Andrew has a meeting discussing companies for the construction job. Duncan, the junior architect, wants to use Thunderbird for the construction. And Andrew nixes the idea, saying they use cheap materials. Doug calls out sick, so Andrew goes home. Doug's teacher, Sandy, shows up at his house to tell his dad that he plagiarized his paper. And so before this, Doug mentions that he wants to find his dad a woman, basically.
A girlfriend. Yeah.
A girlfriend. So was that Doug's plan here? He was going to tank his class so his teacher had to go to his house?
it's a weird exchange between the father and the teacher, because the teacher's like, yeah, he's so smart, but then he plagiarizes. Like, that flies directly in the face of what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I also love the teacher is like, you know, I'm glad at least he didn't just print it from the internet.
It makes no difference.
He handed us all this, so that made it better.
Thank God he didn't plagiarize it from A. He plagiarized it from B instead.
Yeah.
It's so much better when you plagiarize it from B. Yeah, it's a weird conversation, because the dad is even just like, oh, you know, yeah, he's an investigator. Like, the fuck are you talking about, dude? What does that have to do with plagiarism? Yeah,
the whole detective thing makes no sense.
Right.
Right, because it's also a history paper.
Yeah.
Right, and they play for another gag, and it doesn't really pay off.
Yep.
And then that's it. We never hear about him being a detective again. Mm-hmm. Now he's an inventor. This movie just flip-flops like crazy sometimes.
So Doug has to rewrite the paper on literature, detectives, and history, which he doesn't want to do. But it also sounds like the easiest history paper ever. So he uses his machine to conjure up Humphrey Bogart. And this is the second actor we've covered who has played Humphrey Bogart in more than one movie.
Oh, did he play Humphrey Bogart in the Killer Clown movie?
It is not the same guy.
Oh, okay.
But guy I remember played Humphrey Bogart in a whole bunch of movies, and this guy played Humphrey Bogart in at least three movies.
What was the movie with
Funhouse?
Or
Funland. Funland.
I was going to say Clown with a Shotgun, but I'm sure that's a movie.
Probably.
If not, that's our next project.
Yeah.
Yes.
So then Doug takes matters into his own hands to try and set his dad up with his teacher. So he calls her up to set up a time at a restaurant to talk about Doug's grades. That's his excuse. And Duncan has a meeting. Meanwhile, Duncan has a meeting with Stillwell, the contractor from Thunderbird Construction. Thunderbird is paying Duncan on the side to get the mall job. Duncan says that Andrew doesn't want to use them because he thinks they use substandard materials. And Stillwell basically just admits to everything. Because of course we do.
We use flour. What? Yeah.
So basically explains that they cut their materials with flour like a low-level drug dealer would do.
And it doesn't seem like they're paying him a whole lot to admit this.
Right?
50 grand? I mean, that's a lot of money, but...
So he's paying Duncan 50 grand just to get the job.
Right.
Undercutting any other construction business.
But that still seems kind of low, right?
Yeah.
I mean, you're admitting that you're basically using like sand for the building.
This is an entire mall is going to be built with these flour bricks that are just going to collapse within the first week, maybe.
a stiff wind will blow and then it'll knock
it's gonna
over.
Have thousands of people's death on their hands.
Duncan,
you don't think it's a class action lawsuit against them?
Duncan says that'll kill like 100 people. No, you're vastly underestimating how many people go to the mall, especially like on an opening day.
Yeah.
You're probably going to have, what would you say, like 8,000, 9,000 people in there possibly?
Like, imagine if it's a two-story mall. People are going to just be falling right through the floor.
Right. Yeah.
And then, it's got a whole merchandise.
Right. Yeah. There's no way this holds anything. It's literally flour, right? I think they said they mix in a little concrete just to make it hard. A
little bit of clay.
Yep. A little bit of clay. That's not going to hold it. And any inspector worth their salt is going to notice this immediately.
I mean, the brick falls apart while people are just like pulling on it.
It's kind of like that infomercial for the sand. When it's in water, it's super wet, but when you pull it out, it gets, you can like, it's malleable.
Yeah.
So that's what this is basically. It's like DAC essentially.
Yeah. Duncan just taking it, like, he's not getting enough money.
That's what I'm saying. 50,000 for this. You're going to be indicted so fucking quickly.
Yeah.
At least make it worth your while, man. At least ask for like a quarter of a million.
I guess it doesn't make sense for Thunderbird for that, because they won't make any money on this.
I guess. But Jesus, man, I mean, that's such poor planning.
Yeah, it's short-sighted at best.
Yeah, well, if we know anything about architects, you know, if this goes down, he can just pack up and go to another town.
Exactly.
Because that's what architects do.
Right. I think that's probably what he was planning. Like, all right, well, I'm heading to Bridgewater, New Jersey next, so it doesn't matter. No one's going to know. I'm going to change my name to Scott whatever and go from there. Clean bill.
Yep. Stillwell slaps him in the face with a brick, as playful as you do that with a brick, and threatens him to push the deal through. Meanwhile, Mr. Wiederman spies on Doug and Jimmy doing completely benign things like walking through the front door, and just accuses them of being aliens. Doug uses the machine to conjure up Sherry Vale, the star of the series Ocean View, and Andrew comes home and sees Sherry Vale in his son's room, and then Jimmy jets. Doug conjures Sherry Vale back to where she came from, and Andrew tells Doug to destroy the machine.
And she has like a completely non-human reaction.
Oh yeah, she's like a robot.
Instead of just going, "What the fuck?"
Right.
Are you guys aliens?
Yeah.
There's so much aliens talk in this movie.
And there's no aliens.
Yeah. Or is there?
Dun, 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 dun. Dun. I don't think there are.
Mr. Wiederman shows up and warns Andrew about Mr. Rivington being an alien. And then Andrew's just like, all right, well, bye. Doug says something that he wishes his dad would just disappear. And then Andrew starts to disappear while he's trying to figure out what's going on. Doug smashes the machine. And Doug goes downstairs and sees his dad's pants pacing around the living room. Tells Doug to go get the machine now to bring him back. And Doug comes back with the smash machine. And at this point, Andrew is now fully nude in front of his son. Yes. Obviously, his son can't see him, but he knows that he's naked.
He's just freeballing it on that rocking chair. Yeah.
Right, and even if it's not...
As God intends.
Right. Even if it's not awkward for Doug, and you'd have to feel awkward for your son, right? If you're the dad. Like, yeah, I know he can't see me, but I see him, and I'm totally naked.
Right, exactly.
I'm breaking the law at this point. This is not good. It's not good for anybody.
No. So, obviously, he realizes that he's sort of fucked at this moment. And then Stillwell shows up to Duncan's office, tells him that they have to get rid of Andrew, threatens to make him part of the foundation, but Duncan says he'll handle it, don't worry. Next day, Andrew dresses up to cover himself head to toe to get the paper, finds Mr. Wiederman taking pictures on his lawn, tells him to get lost, and then Doug and Andrew go to dinner with Miss Collier, with Andrew wearing a beekeeper helmet, and the waiter is not happy.
No, the waiter's the best part of this movie. He is so bitchy. It's great. I can't remember exactly what he says, but there's a scene. So the waiter comes by, and the dad is like trying to get his attention, and the waiter just gives him like this burn. He burns him real good, and he walks away. Like, and you think that's it? Like, oh, okay. He said his piece. That's it. And he comes back for no apparent reason other than he was just like hoping the dad would ask for his attention, I think. He's like, please say something, please say something. And the dad just says, could you excuse me, please, or something? It's like, I don't see how I could. And it just walks away, like sachets away. Like, oh, man, he just was like, I'm going to go back there. I got another one lined up. Bam, he just drops it on him and walks away. He's the best part of this movie.
My favorite part of that scene, obviously, I saw that waiter was amazing, is how Doug doesn't seem to understand why it's a bad idea to probably take the dad out to dinner.
What?
And then gets mad at everybody in the restaurant.
They're laughing at you. Like, yeah, motherfucker, you're wearing a bee hat.
Yeah. Andrew understands, the dad. He's like, sure. I know what's going down, but I'm doing this for my son.
Right. He's a good dad. Yeah, for sure. And he's trying to get some of that, you know, sweet, sweet teacher action.
Yep, that pent-up teacher.
Now tell me that's not
bliss, as they say.
That's the real like, guys. That just shows guys will do anything to get there, right? Yep. Like, I'm invisible. Fuck it, I'm going out. I'll wear whatever.
He's probably hasn't gotten laid in 6 or 7 years, maybe.
Right. Well, when was the first Iraqi war? Right, we're sticking with that story, by
right,
the way.
Right, yeah.
She was shot down. And she's not really 91. Dead. She's just in Iraq.
Is that the mid-credit stinger at the end?
Yes. Yes. Yeah, we cut to like a hut in Iraq, and it's the mother, and she's, you know, doing whatever. She's planning her escape, and she's got like a fucking machine gun or whatever. She's going to blast her way out.
Yeah, and no, she gets tossed the machine gun by Revington's twin brother, the one that's missing.
Oh, that's awesome. That's badass.
I like so that's how we're making this better?
Yeah. Yes,
I think here so. We'll just keep building on it as we go.
Okay. So a couple of patrons thinks it's the funniest thing in the world that he's wearing a beekeeper helmet. So he excuses himself to the bathroom and dresses and then goes back, pours some oil on the floor, and the waiter slips and drops a whole bunch of food on them and they leave.
See, I thought there were so many better ways that he could have messed with those two customers.
Yeah. I mean, right? He usually just resorts to just beating the shit out of people.
Right. Like, I feel like you could have done a Mrs. Doubtfire move here where you switch the food, maybe put a lot of spicy shit in there, you know, just like, and then like they eat and they, you know, they start coughing. Maybe one of them dies. That's a route that could have been taken. Other than that, maybe just beat the shit out of them. I don't know. I have the waiter just beat the shit out of him. Watch. I don't know why I'm doing this.
Watch them die while you have your hands around your throat invisible.
Right. Yeah, that would be fun.
Looking over at Doug, you made me like this.
This is your fault, Doug. I'm sorry, Dad. I just wanted you to have a girlfriend. That could be the mood that the dad gets into. Now we have to move again.
Right. Yeah, I strangled somebody while invisible.
And then
old story.
Yeah, the dad's saying, not again.
Not again.
God, this is taking a dark turn.
So Andrew, next day, he calls up work and tells him he's going to be out sick for the whole week and won't be able to come in. Karen Black decides that they're going to bring the office to Andrew. So Artie, the security guard, and Duncan go to his house to drop off everything he'll need. It's like working from home. Very progressive.
Sweet gig.
Duncan then has a meeting with Stillwell, and Stillwell tells him to steal the blueprints and pass them off as his own. And then Sandy shows up unannounced at their home with pizza, and I guess she's looking for some action because she's looking for a kiss from him. He says to close her eyes. He takes off beekeeper helmet, kisses her, and then before he's able to put the helmet back on, Doug burns himself on the pizza, and he screams out in pain, and she opens her eyes to see that Andrew's head is missing. She faints.
Yeah, and then when she wakes up from this, it's the quickest understanding of a situation and forgiveness that I've ever seen in a movie.
Yeah, so she comes to, they explain the situation, and she says she's going to try to help them by going to the library and trying to find out about Rivington, see if she can find out anything about him and his inventions. Duncan, meanwhile, pays someone to create his own blueprints for the mall, and basically tracing over Andrew's plans. Presents it to Karen Black, and she thinks they're great. And she's like, if Andrew doesn't come through with his plans, then we'll go with Duncan's. Sandy comes back from the library and finds that Rivington nearly blew up the art museum, became a recluse, and no one's seen him after that. He had an identical twin brother that went to Africa to study rare gems. We then get a quick scene of the identical twin in Africa, played by Robert Donovan, who is not the sort of prestige actor you think would be slumming it in this movie. He's just a random-ass guy that showed up in some Emmanuel movies. I thought he was going to be like a Christopher Plummer sort of in Star Crash sort of thing. It's like, oh, yeah. Man, this guy was in Hamlet with Laurence Olivier. Nope.
Yeah, just needed something to keep him busy or whatever, you know?
Yeah. Just a dude that hung out with Fred Olin Ray, I guess.
Well, hey, listen, man. Can't all be winners, dude.
Yeah, no.
Right? Can't always get the big names.
So Doug attempts to fix the machine. He tries it and fails. Says he needs a 64-bit circuit, and he knows just where to get it. So he calls his buddy Jimmy with a plan. Then Africa, Dr. Rivington reads about a story about Sherry Vale and her alien abduction story, where she mentions Oakmore, California.
How?
Which I don't believe she mentioned that.
She couldn't have known.
Yeah.
She's in the room.
Yeah. They weren't like, we're aliens in Oakmore, California.
Right. Yeah, she knows exactly where they are. I was in house 592 Oakmore, California on Sycamore Road. Like, what the fuck? How is that possible?
Yeah. House 69420 on you know.
She probably saw Doug's like report card and was like, oh, I know where that school is.
Right. I went there. I used to live in this house. This is
I was
crazy.
A cougar too.
How are we doing this year? Oh, not great. Not great. We're gonna miss the playoffs. Ah, all right. See you later.
So Rivington reads Oakmore and he thinks, oh, his brother's back to his old tricks. No one's seen him in a while, so let's go back to Oakmore, California and see what's going on. So Doug and Jamie go to a computer parts store and try to steal a 64-bit circuit, but like, why didn't he just ask for $40?
Right.
His dad is willful to help him solve the problem. It's just the dad has a specific invested interest in him solving this
home.
Problem. And he's home.
Right. He's not at work.
Yeah.
So.
And also, Jimmy is the worst lookout of all time.
Yep.
He just stares at the front door.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
The guy's not there. Walk around, dude.
The guy that owns the store will not be coming through the front door.
Right.
He's already somewhere in the store.
Right. It's just him looking, where is it? Stupid kids.
So they get caught and Jimmy jets again, just runs away. Doug gets sent to jail.
To jail. He's 12. They actually send him into like a jail cell for that.
Mr. Wilson's pressing charges, man. They gotta wait for the juvenile police to go pick him up.
Yeah.
Send him to juvie. So Andrew and Sandy go to the police station. Mr. Wilson owns an electronics store, plans press charges, and Mr. Wilson starts off at an 11. He's about to throw down with Sandy. Are you calling me a liar?
Yeah, he's a real asshole, man. You're gonna press charges on a kid? Just like, come on.
Yeah.
Tell the parents or whatever.
Just like he's my student. He wouldn't steal. Which it would have been just so much easier. It's like, hey, can we just pay for this and just be on our way?
Right. Like, listen, I'll punish him at home.
Yeah.
And I'll give him detention and. Here's the $40.
Yeah, but she outwardly calls Mr. Wilson a liar, even though she says she's not calling him a liar, and he gets noticeably upset.
I think he said he was gonna hit her.
I think so too. Yeah, more or less. I think he kind of mumbled some stuff, but he was lunging at her like she was gonna get popped.
Right. He insinuated I think he was gonna kick her or something like that.
Yeah.
But yeah, he's a bad person.
Yeah. So Andrew undresses and goes into the police station and kicks Mr. Wilson and the cop until Mr. Wilson gets arrested for contempt and they escape.
That's a whole different sentence if I wasn't paying attention.
But I don't know if you could be held in contempt when you're just in a police station. Is that a thing? I don't know. I feel like that's just from movies. I feel like that's just
it's a court thing.
A court thing, right?
I don't know.
I mean, I've never heard anyone being. We should try that. Let's just go somewhere and tell someone they're being held in contempt. Just like, I'll go to work tomorrow. Like, if someone says something, I'm holding you in contempt. Like, we're what?
Oh.
Sir, this is a Wendy's.
I thought you wanted us to go around and citizens arrest people.
I think you just wanted us to go kick cops and see what happens.
Well, we can do that. I mean, we won't be able to record this podcast for a while.
Or kick people in the cock, which is what I could have mistakenly heard.
Yeah, oh, okay. So I think he said kick cops, Mark.
No, I know.
At least that's what I thought.
No,
that's
that was my said. Point of I could have very easily misheard that sentence when you said, and he kicks Mike Wilson and the cop, you know.
Nope, that's gotcha. Not what I said.
Do whatever you want to do.
Yep. So they go back home. Karen Black calls Andrew to fire him because now she's loving Duncan's design. And she's like, oh, this is all we need. We don't need this hot shot that we hired.
He puts up no fight, by the way.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, fired?
Things are really well.
Yeah. Well, what do you know? I got fired.
His performance gets very different when he's invisible. It gets very voiceover.
Yeah.
Like voiceover actor. It becomes very cartoonish.
Why I oughta. He does stuff like that.
Yeah. So then he hangs up the phone and he's just like, I bet Duncan's behind all this. I bet he stole my designs. And I could prove it, but he has to figure out a way to expose Duncan because he's still invisible. Then, from out of nowhere, Dr. Rivington shows up to the house. And meanwhile... And
the neighbor thinks that he's back from the dead.
Yep. But he's like, no, that was my brother. In the meanwhile, Artie confronts Duncan. Artie, the security guard, confronts Duncan about stealing Andrew's plans. So Duncan knocks him out and ties him up. And Dr. Rivington tools around with the gadget and uncovers the blueprints for how to fix it. So they get to Rivington and Doug get to work. Andrew gets frustrated, so he goes to lie down for a while.
You're so lame. What a lame dad thing to do.
So Stillwell sends a bunch of goons to the house to make sure Andrew doesn't make to the presentation. Rivington and Doug attempt the machine, but it doesn't work. Sandy and Andrew get an idea and decide to go to the presentation. And the presentation begins, and Sandy and Andrew show up in the office. Rivington finally reveals that he knows what's missing. It's this some gem that he found. I don't 100% understand where he found the gem.
It was on the beekeeper hat. I thought it was like honey.
Yeah, that's what I thought too.
Right? Or like amber, I guess. Yeah. I don't know. It was either honey or amber. I couldn't be honest, it's bullshit, whatever it is.
It's a blood gem from Africa.
That's what it was. Yep. That's 100%. Thank God I brought this blood gem with me all the way from Africa.
He says he gave it to his brother. So it is definitely from him, from his African travels. So they show up at the meeting, and during the meeting, Andrew, as Invisible Andrew, attacks Duncan and forces him to sexually assault one of the clients. And
I forgot about that move. That's a very weird move in this film.
So Andrew excuses himself, and Duncan excuses himself to the bathroom to get cleaned up because Andrew also like made him drop like champagne on himself, and then Andrew just beats him up in the bathroom. He tries to bargain. Duncan tries to bargain with Andrew, said, "I'll give you whatever you want." Andrew asks him to admit that he stole his plans, and he says no because Stillwell will kill him. So he just knocks him out and takes his clothes. Meanwhile, Artie breaks out of the restraints. Rivington and Doug get the machine to work, and Doug wishes to bring his dad back from invisibility, so it works. This is where Andrew steals his clothes, so he takes a suit. Rivington and Doug leave the house, and the goons threaten them with crowbars. Rivington fights them off while Doug wishes them away to prison with Mr. Wilson. Jimmy also shows up and throws a newspaper at them. Andrew shows up to the presentation and tells Karen Black about Duncan stealing his plans. Shows his initials hidden in the plans, so proves that it was his plans all along. And Stillwell tries to escape with his kickback money. Artie interferes and gets his ass kicked, but shows that the building materials are garbage. Andrew gets his jog back, and Duncan runs off ashamed. Then we have kind of like a postscript scene at the house. Rivington scares off Mr. Witterman with an alien mask. So Witterman goes home and he's like, "I'd prove that it's an alien." And then Mr. Witterman's wife is an alien, it's revealed. Yeah. She puts down her newspaper and she reveals herself to be an alien.
They're already here.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Very lackluster.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Then Rivington decides he's going back to the jungle, and he takes the gadget with them. And before he leaves, he uses the gadget to summon Sherry Vale, and they go off to the Serengeti together.
So
he kidnaps her.
I was going to say that.
Yeah. Yep. He kidnaps Sherry Vale and presumably does things that she doesn't want him to do to her.
Oh, yeah.
He's basically a human trafficker at this point.
Yep. Yeah. That's 100% what he is, Mark. Yep. How would you like to go to the Serengeti? I'd like to go home. Not too fucking bad.
Yeah. To the airport, she thinks she's going for Italian food.
Right. Yeah. I love Sarah. I love Italian food. Like, oh, this is going to be so much easier than I thought.
Yeah.
She doesn't even have a passport. I'm assuming she's only wearing a bathing suit.
Well, it's the 90s.
Yeah.
Right. Sure. Yeah. Terrorism hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah. But passports still existed, guys.
Did it?
Yes. Passports were a thing before 9/11.
I think
my joke was that you could bribe, you know, an airport security guy. Oh, just let her on. She's fine. She's cool. She's with me.
Well, she's also
suggesting that the people that work for the TCA aren't all upstanding the letter of the law people.
100%.
Man, you're going to piss off the wrong people.
There was no TCA.
We're going to move on. There's people that worked at the airport.
Why can't I?
TSA.
TSA. I'm sorry. TSA. Yeah, cut that out. For sure, cut that out.
Nope.
Oh, God damn it.
So then it gets super dark at the end where Doug wishes he had the machine back so he could ask for his mom back.
Yeah.
He could have done that at any time in the beginning, but nope.
Oh, yeah. Why didn't they do that? There's so many things that he could have done.
Nope. He just really wanted he wanted to. What was his plan with Sherry Vale? Was it to give to his dad, or was he gonna try and fuck Sherry Vale? Kind of think he wanted it for himself.
Spank bank material.
Yeah.
Yeah.
100%.
Show me your tits, right?
And also to show off for his friend.
Right. Oh yeah. Jimmy popped a huge boner at that moment.
He definitely did. And the one thing.
Why you ran away?
The one thing that really annoyed me was when the dad sees that he has this awesome machine that defies space and time and logic, and the kid goes, "We can make so much money," and he says, "We work for our money here." Don't be that guy. All right, yeah. There's nothing wrong. You're not stealing.
Nope.
Right. I can understand you want to teach your kid about responsibility and hard work, but come on, my man.
Hey, you're just redistributing the wealth.
Right. Mm-hmm. When you get a miracle, you don't fucking say no to it, all
right? That's right.
You don't do that, all right? You're spitting in the face of everyone who needs that money, all right, dude? Don't be that guy, all right? If you, to the listeners out there, if you come across or invent a machine that grants your wishes, the first thing you should do is just ask
for more wishes.
Money. Well, I don't think there's a limit, Mark. I think you just get an unlimited wishes here. So you wish for Sherry Vale, first and foremost. She's probably like 60 now, so that's probably not great, but still you do it. And then you wish for a ton of money.
Just because you have to, right?
Yeah. Well, to pay homage to this movie, you have to wish for Sherry Vale. All right, take her to the Serengeti, and then just a ton of, well, first money, then Serengeti.
Yeah.
And then wish for your dead mom, if you have a dead mom.
That is the official canon order.
Yes, that's my recommendation. You can do it however you want, but that's the correct way to do it.
Yeah, and that's the end of Invisible Dad. It sucks.
This is
one of the worst movies
bad.
We've watched in a long time.
Yeah, we were kind of on a roll with decent movies, at least watchable movies, and this we just fucking tanked real hard on this one, guys.
Like at least 50 Shades of Grey had production value behind it.
Right. Yeah, and it had a decent soundtrack.
Yeah.
It had nudity.
Yep.
And even though it was like super awkward nudity, I mean, that trumps this stuff any day of the year.
I think I'm going to say Santa with Muscles is like the last stinker.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that had Hulk Hogan in it. So
yep.
At least that had
an Angel Baby.
Oof, man, Angel Baby.
This movie could have used its own Angel Baby.
Yeah.
I don't know what to say about this.
That after this podcast, Dan, me and you are going to go write the sequel, which is the mom and the other twin brother breaking out of Iraq.
Yes, 100%. Yeah, we're going to get the flashback of the mom being shot down over Iraq, right? And she escaped, or she's taken prisoner, right? She's taken prisoner, tortured for, we're going to say tortured for five, 6 years, right? She's got to be there for a while. And then she escapes somehow. I don't know. We'll figure that out. She escapes. The twin brother helps her escape.
And it'd be like the end of the Mario Brothers movie where he goes, you know, it's about your son or something. Oh, no, that's
Back to
the
Future.
Future.
We got
to
help your kid, Marty. We got to help your kids.
Yes.
Yeah. So I think it would be the brother frees the mom. Right. I don't know why he's there, but maybe he wished to be there. I don't know. But he's there. He rescues the mom. And now they have to make their way back to civilization while fighting Iraqis.
Yep.
What do you think, Ant?
Sounds good.
OK.
And then they take the WMDs.
Right. Because at this point, Iraq was still like our enemy. Right. So
still
it's good.
Kinda are, but...
Well, I mean, they've kind of cooled off. It's more North Korea now. And like maybe Russia still. Russia is always going to be one of the big premier bad guys. But is it okay to do it now? Like Iraq, is it still okay if we were to do that?
As long as it's not China, you're fine.
Okay.
Because then we can release the movie.
That's true. That's where the big bucks come from.
Yeah. So as long as it's not China and there's not skeletons in it.
Well, that's why Birds of Prey hasn't done well. They didn't get that China release.
Yeah. Exactly. That's the reason. But.
So, Ant, what did you think other than that this movie sucked? Is that it?
Yeah, I mean, this should have been his first bikini movie. That would have been more interesting.
I don't know if there's anything that he could have done to make the. There's nothing this guy's ever done that's interesting, really. Just I think it's more shock value that he's done. Like, these movies are, they're not even. It's a disgrace to call them cookie cutter.
Yeah.
Because these movies are just shit. Yeah. It's just total shit. And I get that there's in I guess in Hollywood or in the filmmaking business, however you want to call it, you're always going to have obviously your upper echelon guys, and then you're going to have your mid tier, and then you're going to have, you know, this fucking guy. But God damn it, I wish this didn't exist. I wish guys like him didn't exist, because we don't need these movies. These are useless movies. They're useless. What do? They're good for this. That's it.
Are you talking specifically this movie or like his entire filmography?
I would say his entire filmography is just complete shit. I've only seen one of his movies. Well, that's not true. I've gone on record saying I've probably seen a number of the bikini movies. Yeah. But they're shit. They don't even do that well, probably.
Yeah, you've only seen them 2 minutes at a time.
Well, give me a little credit. All right. Five minutes. Depending on if I'm tired.
Yeah. I mean, there's plenty of plot in there where you're just not jerking it the whole time.
That's true. I mean, and the women are attractive enough, obviously. I don't want to get into that. Regardless. I'm not digging down that hole.
This is the backdoor pilot for our new podcast.
Yeah.
Guys, I just...
This movie was really bad.
It was. It's really stupid. It serves no purpose in life. It serves no purpose in film history. It's easily forgettable. I can't wait to forget it, which will be immediately after I hang up with you guys.
Oh, yeah. So. Before I watched this for a second time, I could not remember a single thing that happened in this movie.
Yeah, I mean, I remember bits and pieces of it. I just really remember the waiter going off. But that's it, man. Like, just fuck this movie, dude.
Well, blame the Invisible Man for this one.
Well, I don't know. I couldn't even tell you who this is directed for or made for, but fuck them. Those people. Because someone must have liked this. He made other movies.
Yeah. Children in the 90s, I guess.
Yeah, we were dumbasses. Yeah. Invisible Dads. Terrible. I think I was going to say suck my dick. I refrained at that
point. All right. It sounds like we're wrapping up. So I think that's going to, you know, you guys want to plug your shit, make it quick?
Sure. At DAquino122 on Twitter. Follow Stranger Damies on Twitter and Instagram at Stranger Damies. We just passed 400 followers. So that's a nice milestone. We're gearing up for 500. We're getting there slowly but surely. And we were discussing possibly having a little giveaway once we get to 500. Obviously, still in the works, but it could be you. And once we figure out what we're going to give away, it's going to be fucking awesome. It's going to be better than Invisible Dad, I promise you that.
Well, right? we're gonna give away gifts, not the people.
Well,
you said we're going to have a giveaway, and it could be you. That's
what you said. Did I say that? Holy shit. I did not mean that.
I knew what you meant.
Say it's going to be awesome. Yeah, I don't know. I'm tired.
Just breaking your balls.
But... Maybe I will give away someone. Fuck it.
It's going to be Sherry Vale. We have it right here.
Right. We're going to give away Sherry Vale. Follow us there. Hit us up if you have any. If you like what you hear, if you don't like what you hear, we're more than willing to discuss ad nauseum.
Yeah, and that hitting that 400 followers is perfect timing coming up to episode 100 of Stranger Damies, which aired yesterday here. So one of our better RP episodes, which I really did enjoy. So make sure you listen to that. It's on iTunes, Google Play, you know, anywhere you can listen to podcasts. You know, we're soon, you know, still in the works. We're trying to catch and just watch our videos, you know, probably going to be behind on that because we're still trying to figure out you know what we're doing with that, but at least the podcast, the audio is perfectly fine and it comes out really well, and you guys are, you know, barreling towards you know, a final showdown with the one of the main antagonists that you've had so far, so be on the lookout for that every Wednesday. right there on all your favorite podcast feed.
Okay. Yeah, and we are They Call This Movie. You can find us at theycallthismovie.podbean.com or on all podcast streaming apps at They Call This Movie. Search that. We should pop right up. That's Spotify, Spotify, Stitcher, Google Play Podcasts, basically anything that uses an iTunes feed, we should come right up. Anywhere you cast your pods, basically. We're the Main Damey. You can find it at themaindamey.com, on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, at the Main Damey. Just search that. We should come right up. We're all now a proud member of Geek Vibes Nation. GVNation.com is our main website, and they're on all social at Geek Vibes Nation. We're on their podcast stream, along with a whole bunch of other great shows. Stranger Damey's is there, a bunch of other shows that we have nothing to do with is there. Top 10 with Tia. Bunch of great people, have great shows, a whole bunch of different interests that they satisfy there. And that's Geek Vibes Nation. And that's going to do it for us today. This has been Invisible Dad. I put these poor guys through this movie this week. Apologize to them. And hopefully next week's movie will be better. But that's going to wrap it up. I am at AntDelVec on Twitter. If you have any suggestions, you could send us an email at themaindamey@gmail.com. Please, if you have 5 seconds, just rate and review our podcast. Give us 5 stars on iTunes. Tell us we're doing great. Just it really helps us out, get seen because of the algorithm. But that's going to basically do it. So for Dan Aquino and Mark Myers, this is Anthony DelVecchio telling director of Invisible Dad, Fred Olin Ray, to go fuck himself.
All right.